therapy saved my life. Like, I was 17 kilograms literally underweight. Wow. And like, my heart rate had significantly slowed down. I lost my hair. My period stopped. Like, it was, my body was shutting down.
Emma, welcome to the Unbrand Me podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
No, it's great to have you here. I remember being on your podcast and I really enjoyed it. And I said, hey, you know, when once we started this podcast, I said, I'd love to return the favor, but also, you know, be on the other side of asking you questions.
Thank
you. The Unbrand Me podcast is about understanding, peeling back the layers, finding out the life stories of founders, entrepreneurs, brand builders, you know, people we find interesting, to understand how their life stories and big moments in their life affected the journeys that they're on and the brands that they build and the businesses that they run.
I love that.
I think it's interesting because a lot of people don't understand what goes behind building businesses. And I think it's really important to, A, show the authentic true self of what happened. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also really, really key to kind of make people feel comfortable with the uncomfortable, that we all pass through it. And I think that should give hope.
Yeah.
There's another philosophy that we believe in at Brandwagon, which is better people make better brands and better brands make a better world.
Yeah, I love that.
We do feel you're one of those better people.
Thank you.
So we want you to share with us your better world and how you're trying to change the world, or at least impact it in various ways.
Thank you.
I love watching your stories. I love, you know, watching your journey unfold, you know, with Pete, obviously, we were at school together, your partner, your DJ son, Archie, who's only 2 years old. I love watching the baking videos. It feels really interesting to see you, you know, go through that phase, a phase which, I mean, I haven't been in for a while now because my youngest is 10.
Hmm.
I also do not miss the cleaning up. I'm glad that's on you and not on me.
I know, but I do have help with that, so it like makes a big difference.
So let's start unpacking a bit, and when I think of Emma, you are so many things in one. You're a mother, a daughter, a wife, a partner, a business founder, a founder of A Life I Choose. But when people ask, who is Emma, who do you say you are?
I think in the past, I sort of placed my career first, you know, so I would have said, like, I'm a psychotherapist, I'm a lifestyle strategist, and I'm the founder of A Life I Choose. But now it's become more like, I'm a mom, I'm a wife, I'm a psychotherapist, I'm a lifestyle strategist, and I'm the founder of A Life I Choose.
And does that align with the priorities that you're seeing in your life at the moment? Is that why you're putting this first? Because you spend much more time being the mom, being the partner, and then...
I don't know if it's really about time. I mm-hmm. think it's more about like intention, like okay. where my like focus and energy goes. Mm-hmm. So yes, I do spend a lot less time on work than I used to, for
yeah,
sure.
And rightly so, I guess.
And I designed myself to get here because I always knew I wanted to have kids and I wanted to give them that focus and that attention. So... I never wanted to be a stay-at-home mom, like mm-hmm. kind of. I always wanted to work, but I knew that like when I'm with my children, I'm with my children.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so like mm-hmm. everything else.
And how's that coming along in terms of managing to really create, you know, the right boundaries or the right balances, if you wish? Because I think, you know, we talk about boundaries and should we talk about boundaries? But in reality, like when I look at my own life, Brandwagon is such a big part of my life and I do not want to detach it, but I do make an effort not to bring, you know, maybe the boring stuff home and bring the exciting stuff and also the life lessons home. So I think maybe my kids are a little bit older, so I can have those conversations with them.
Yeah.
But I think it's not about maybe boundaries, but it's more about, you know, the kind of limits that we put ourselves to. What do you think about that?
I mean, for me, it kind of shifts. Like there are weeks where I'll be like, this is such a good balance. Like, you know, like I feel like I'm really like, I give enough time to work. I give enough time to Archie. And then there are weeks when I'm like, one of them's out of sync or mm-hmm. both of them are out of sync. Like, you know, it just depends on like how loud my inner critic is and so on and so forth, you know, and... But I do like to kind of tune in with that feeling of not enoughness and see, mm-hmm. like, is this valid? You know, am I just giving myself a hard time or do I need to tweak things? You know, so like I'm kind of in that phase right now, you know, where I want to get back in the game mm-hmm. with work more. I've got new goals now mm-hmm. and a new direction, and I'm excited about it. And I'm also aware it's going to take effort and consistency yeah. and dedication
discipline.
And discipline, just like it took to build a life I choose in the first yeah. place. But I have sort of the past 2 years, you know, like redirected my focus and given so much more mm-hmm. to my son. At first I tried to do it all and it was just like, I mean, if I want to go bananas, I can, yeah. but like it doesn't make for a regulated human being, like, you know, so I had to make a choice and I'm really happy I did. And I still want my family to be at the forefront, like, of my life. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I don't want to give up on like what makes me me and like my aspirations in life now have even like shifted. I've become so much more community focused.
Okay.
Like I'm always thinking, maybe it sounds a bit funny, but I always thinking about the world.
Well, I think, and it's become a pattern over a number of the discussions we've had with different founders. And if you think back or you look back at sort of the academic side and, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, with the need of self-actualization, and self-actualization is also about helping others, about giving.
Yeah.
I think that's obviously a very, very strong part of most founders' journey is about what is our impact on the world? What is the legacy that we're trying to leave behind? And how can all these internal thoughts, all these, you know, important feelings that we have be shared to help others.
Yeah.
And I think that's an interesting angle.
Yeah.
I don't want to jump straight into where you're going before I know where you've been.
Okay.
And I think your story is really key because I think your story shapes a lot where you are today and also the business that you've built.
Okay.
So I would love you to go back in time and just, you know, relate how you got here, you know, when those start. And it's ironic that we started talking about the kids. I mean, it's actually when you started working with kids, no? Is your first job was working with kids, right?
Yeah.
Or so maybe it goes further back. So
I think, it goes to my childhood.
Of course it does.
So definitely 13 years old, but probably even before that. So when I was 13 years old, I just, I stopped eating. And I didn't understand why. I just knew that I, like, eating brought so much anxiety and fear and guilt. And so it became this super stressful situation. And I did it in secret at first. Like, you know, I would, like, throw away my lunches and get away with not having breakfast and then, like, eat dinner, but, like, somehow get rid of it. And I really struggled. And I was very lucky because my parents got me into therapy. And this was at a time when therapy was not cool.
Yeah.
Therapy was like, you go to therapy if there's something seriously wrong with you.
Yeah.
Like if you have big problems. So a lot of people tried to dissuade my parents.
Oh, wow.
You know, or kind of told them like, maybe she's super stressed, go on a holiday. Or maybe she's just being a brat, like, you know, kind of like just discipline her, you know. But my parents really followed their gut and like sent me to therapy. And it wasn't like an overnight.
Of course not.
You know, it was a 3-year journey. But therapy saved my life. Like I was 17 kilograms
literally
underweight.
Wow.
And like my heart rate had significantly slowed down. I lost my hair. My period stopped. Like it was, my body was shutting down on itself. Like it was very dangerous.
Absolutely.
And I remember the fear that my parents experienced. But therapy saved my life because it helped me to recover from the traumas that had led me to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And it helped me to make meaning of this chaotic world that can be so painful to be in. And it just helped me to heal. So that was where the journey started.
Wow, that's a really powerful story. I had no idea about this.
Mm.
And thank you so much for sharing. And I think when we look back at, I think when we make it so far, we forget how tough those times are.
Yeah.
How tough those teenage years were. And obviously now, you know, being a dad of two teenagers, I look at them and I say, shit, I remember those days. Those were really tough days. Those were probably some of the toughest days that we've been through.
Yeah.
And reality is that we haven't been through the experiences in life to teach us what strength and what tools we can use
exactly
to fix those.
Exactly. I think when we're teens, we need guides more than anything.
Yeah. But obviously your parents are not the easiest people, not yours specifically, but parents in general are not typically the ones that we go to reach out to get help. Maybe in your case it was different. In your case, clearly, you know, your parents were very aware and also very ready to stick to what they believed in too.
Yes.
I think that's really powerful.
Yes, I'm super grateful to them for all that they did. Like, you know,
thank you,
even
Mr.
like
and Mrs. Hogg.
Yes, even like sending me, you know, I had to go to hospital a few
of
times
course.
And be hospitalized. Like, so they were very, very, very supportive. And but then my journey sort of, so that's where the interest mm-hmm. in psychotherapy began. Like, as in, I really gained this massive appreciation for this practice.
Of course.
And from then on, I was hooked, always reading psychology books. And like, I was super determined to get into university so I could become a psychotherapist. You know, at the time I thought psychologist, and then it changed and
yeah.
whatever. But and then once I graduated as a psychotherapist, you know, when you study psychotherapy, it's kind of treated like a vocation, or at
okay.
least this was my experience.
Especially
of
in those
it.
Days, probably even more, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's we were never taught about, like a lot of professions, you're not mm-hmm. taught about the business side of it
yeah.
or like actually sort of supporting yourself financially and like making money. So I really struggled. And for me, I struggled financially
yeah.
at that point. And for me, sort of like being financially dependent was never an option. I
mm-hmm.
always wanted to be financially independent, be able to have decision-making power, be able to contribute to my family, and just kind of like have that sense of pride in myself. Like, and so, yeah. So then that around that same time, I started to, I was really listening to people like Tony Robbins,
mm-hmm.
Sarah Blakely, Mimi and Alex Icon, the founders of the 5-Minute Journal, who
okay.
I'm now an affiliate for. And they super inspired me. And I took what I learned from them and I invested in coaching at that point, as opposed to therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And that, the coaching really empowered me to apply what I was learning and to create like set goals and a vision and create a strategy to meet those goals. And I had a coach to hold me accountable. So then I decided I was going to become a coach, obviously. So
sure.
because like I saw it like a superpower, like you've got therapy, which helps you to like build the self-awareness,
mm-hmm.
do the self-reflection, do the healing, you know, and that's great. But then you've got coaching on top of that, that helps you to really like thrive and make a difference and like put yourself out there
mm-hmm.
with confidence and so on and so forth. So from there, I developed the A Life I Choose methodology, which is a combination of therapy and coaching. And this is what I offer to my one-on-one clients. And then I also created the Create Your Kick-Ass Career course,
yeah.
which is a digital course, which you guys helped me to bring out into the world and helps people to create a course that they love and not a course, sorry,
yeah,
a career that they love
and
so
I think,
on and so forth.
I think that's such an interesting angle to obviously, I mean, you literally, you know, took everything that you learned in life and everything that was thrown at you and turned that around into effectively a successful business and a business which people are aware of today and look up to as well. And they look up to you as well as a coach.
Thank you.
To really help them, you know, get through their journey in life. And I think that's really positive. So if I had to ask you, you know, when was the moment that you decided, when was that like aha moment of how do I manage to mix, you know, everything I've learned with everything that I now know through what, you know, I've been through,
mm-hmm.
to give that out to customers out there? When was the moment that you decided the life I choose was going to be, you know,
a thing? I think it sort of brewed over time, back in like, I don't remember the year exactly, but it was a while ago, while I was studying, like doing my master's in psychotherapy.
Okay.
I knew I wanted to write a blog because I wanted people to kind of learn about self-development and be able to like use the tools that I had learned mm-hmm. and just make people, I think my intention, not I think, I know my intention was make therapy cool at the time. This was before I started the coaching as well. Mm-hmm. This was my intention was just make therapy cool. And luckily, I wasn't the only person on the planet who had that like aha moment. So
there was, I think you managed to, you were ahead of the curve when you did this, I think, from a local standpoint. Mm. And then there was a movement that was also pushing you forward and you joined up on that.
Yeah.
I think, you know, coming back to the who are we? And if we look back, I mean, it must be really hard for you because you are the brand and you are the person.
Yeah.
You know, and again, coming back to that divide between who's who. I mean, there are those moments which, you know, which must be tough in life, but yet you still carry the brand. Mm. And obviously your brand is about, you know, living a better life, a life that you choose.
Yeah.
And getting through all the, every single obstacle and all adversity and you know, and powering through with resilience, but also sharing your weak sides as well. And I'm quite, I mean, obviously, you know, for those who don't follow you, I mean, I think you're very open about, you know, the times and the tough times that you might be going through.
Yeah.
And I think that's really interesting. How do you feel like there's this sort of weight on your shoulders about you being the brand and being the person behind the brand? How do you detach from that? Is there an added layer of pressure on this sort of openness?
A good question. I think sometimes when I'm going through a difficult time, I don't want to be out there. You know, I want to retreat and I want to process and I want to sort of be alone. And I do take those breaks sometimes. You know, I've taken one recently, like, and I don't put so much pressure on myself anymore because I need it, like, even creatively. Like, I need to withdraw sometimes to, like, go through an existential rearranging. Mm-hmm. I used to call it a crisis. Now I call it a rearranging.
I like how you rebranded that. Right?
This happens way too often for it to be a crisis each time, you know? So, yeah.
No, I think kudos to you. And I think, you know, you're a great example, you know, for others out there who are building their own brands, who, you know, need to feel comfortable with the fact that these things do happen. And it's fine to have a digital detox, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
And to step away till you're comfortable in coming back and showing the world, or not coming back ever and saying, you know, okay, that was then and this is now and this is, you know, where I'm going next.
Yeah.
I know it's hard to look at the world today with a positive light, because obviously there's a lot of stuff that's happening, you know, on every different corner of the world. There's the imminent threat of, you know, of war, and, you know, and obviously we're more aware of the things that are around us, you know, and health and business and inflation and you know. But if you had to step back and look at the world today, we're in a way much better place than the world has ever been in.
True.
Okay. So in terms of, you know, there's way more medicines, there's way more access to food, there's more access to health, there's more access to support systems.
Yeah.
But are we really happier?
Good question.
And have we put ourselves in a position where we have a lot of the things around us that make our life more comfortable? You know, we're sitting in here, there's a light on top of us, but the air conditioning is blowing this lovely, fresh, cool air. You know, we're, you know, being supported by the guys behind the scenes. There's, you know, we all move back to our houses and, you know, there's a lot of that. But are we happier that we're not maybe suffering through the cold and the, you know, and the pain of living life outside in nature? But are we happier as people?
That's a super question, and I'm excited to answer it for you.
I'm excited to hear your answer.
So something that has definitely been documented since the end of World War II is like this lack of connection. And it's sort of trickled down generationally. And it's Gabor Mate speaks about it as a phenomenon that they refer to as peer orientation, which is how it impacts our youth.
Okay.
But it's not just our youth, because we were the youth before, so we've been through it and our parents went through it, you know. And basically what this means is that there is like a lack of attachment between the child and the parent. The attachment is not as strong. as it used to be. And so if you think about a duck, right? Mm-hmm. So a little duckling hatches from its egg. The duckling needs to attach, and the duckling attaches typically to the mother who's right there.
Mm-hmm.
But if the mother isn't around, the duckling will attach to anything.
Okay.
And the same happens with us. So when our parents are not as present, we'll attach to whatever. If we don't have like those adult...
So that could be anything from social media to the content that's being thrown at us.
Exactly. And so what is happening is that as opposed to attaching to like adult figures who have had more life experience and can guide us mm-hmm. better, our youth are attaching to peers who don't have life experience and don't love them unconditionally. Mm-hmm. This is the major thing. So it's becoming, it's a painful space for children to be in because they are seeking that unconditional love and they are seeking that connection and they are trying to find their way. And so they are looking to their peers for that sense of belonging, which a peer cannot give.
Mm-hmm.
And then they experience rejection and pain and so on and so forth. And to cope, the body unconsciously creates ego defenses. So a mask of invulnerability. So we're seeing this sort of mass sort of invulnerability.
So people trying to look tougher than they are, people trying to give this feeling that they don't need everyone else.
Yeah.
And in this world of social communication, social channels, that sort of, you know, everybody's connected to everything that's happening. Like people who maybe don't know me, but know everything
but
I do every single morning, if I go for a bike ride, if I go for a run. So there's this artificial connectedness, but are we actually more connected? So we've got all the communication tools in the world. I can, you know, I can WhatsApp Martin, who's sitting there just by using my iPad right now, but I can also connect with my cousin in Australia,
yes.
you know, just over email or Slack or whatever it is. And yet we are very disconnected as people.
The research says that we are the loneliest that we've ever been. This is the loneliest, it's a pandemic of loneliness. Mm-hmm. And loneliness has the same impact on the body as smoking 15 cigarettes a day.
Wow.
You know, it's dangerous for us. It's not good. And also when we're lonely, then you experience a lack of trust in other people, you go more into fight or flight. And whenever you go more into fight or flight, what happens is that the brain sends way more energy to the limbic system.
Mm-hmm.
So where your fear center is and all of the emotions, so that you're on guard, right? But it doesn't send enough energy to your prefrontal cortex. It shuts it off. And the prefrontal cortex is the CEO of the brain. The prefrontal cortex takes information from all parts of the brain and integrates it. And this is what health is. It's integration.
Okay.
This is what therapy helps with. And when we are able to integrate, we are able to forward think. So we can think about future generations. We can think about our neighbors. We can have compassion. But when we're in go, 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 like all the time, mm-hmm. rushing from here to there, blah, 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 we cannot think, we cannot be compassionate. I can't think generations ahead because I'm in fight or flight.
Yeah, you're and saving that, the moment.
Mm-hmm.
You're saving yourself in that moment as opposed to trying to...
And what happens is that breaks down the ability to connect. And the prefrontal cortex is developed in relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It's not developed within the womb. It comes later. It comes from that eye contact, that playing, mm-hmm. that gentleness, that touch.
Mm-hmm. Feels like we're quite doomed at this point in time, the way you're describing this conversation. But obviously, I feel like, you know, just talking about this is obviously extremely important. But clearly, there should be some more action behind our words as well. So what should we be doing?
But the thing is, like, if we don't acknowledge, like, the pain point, there is no reason to move, right?
Yeah.
If we stay with the comfort, oh, I've got my AC and I can order my food, like, and it will be here in 15 minutes. Like, why do I move forward, you know?
Yeah.
So we need to acknowledge, like, that yes, there is threat. There is threat to our family systems. If our children can't attach to us, then we have less influence.
Mm-hmm.
And who are they being influenced by?
Yeah,
God knows. You know, what are the values? Like, mm-hmm. what's happening? So, you know, we have to bring back that connection. And that is what it is. It's all about connection. It's about tuning in. But I cannot tune in to another human being unless, one, I tune in with myself and understand myself. And two, unless I learn to regulate my state, bring calmness to myself, you know, kind of calm myself down, get myself into a state of healing so that I can turn on that compassion part of my brain, you know. So yes, it is. It sometimes I feel like I've become a bit more doom and gloom since having Archie, but I feel so much more purposeful because this is why I do the work that I do. And also my grandmother was like this. Like, my grandmother used to work with Mother Teresa, and she was a part of SOS Malta, and she went to Albania and they built a school, and I think they built a hospital as well. And she was so purposeful, and she always wanted to have a positive social impact. And my grandmother is one of those people who I'm very strongly attached to. So I've inherited a lot of her values. And, you know, she's passed away now, and I still feel like she's with me every single day. And getting emotional. And my sense of purpose is really strong. So while I might sound a bit doom and gloom, at the same time, I am super hopeful. And my hope and my wish is that Archie will grow up in a kinder, more compassionate, more cooperative society. Like, that matters to me a lot. And obviously, like, it's not all on me, like, kind of, you know, but like, I'm going to do as much as I can towards that end.
In a world where brands are really behind a lot of the communication that's out there, and where fundamentally brands are behind a lot of influencers who are, you know, sharing their message or at least being sponsored for what they're doing, what can brands do and what can business leaders do to maybe fill that void? And I don't know if it's even possible, but I do feel that sometimes as a business leader, as an organizational leader, CEOs who run their companies and build culture within their organizations need to also maybe sometimes fill the void that is present within the community. And I think that we have a responsibility as leaders to show compassion with our teams and to, you know, try and build that connection as well with our teams and develop, you know, this whole employee branding is not about advertising to get more employees. Employee branding is about building a culture of trust.
Yes.
And it's about building a culture of trust, taking your organization, your brand towards a vision which has been set. And it should be a collective vision of the organization. What do you think leaders should do more of? And when I talk about leaders, I don't necessarily think of just the C-suite, but I think also middle management and also just peers within an organization. If we're living in a world of loneliness, how can our connected organizations fill that void? Can it be done?
So are you speaking about the impact that an organization can have on society, or are you speaking about what should organizations do within themselves to boost connection?
So my belief is that unless an organization fixes itself from the inside, there's no way that it can communicate a message on the outside, because otherwise it's as useless as greenwashing. It's superficial. And people will see through that in the long run.
Yes.
So I think first we need to start with what happens at home.
Okay, so you're asking about the
inside. So first is the inside, and then how does that message come across through the channels that an organization speaks with, whether it's through its brands or through the people it attaches its brand image to, which are the influencers. So let's tap into the first part, okay? So how can we create more connected organizations?
What a beautiful, beautiful question. All of your questions are so, like, well thought out. I love it.
Thank you.
I mean, I'm not going to pretend to be some kind of, like, guru when it comes to this stuff, because I'm not. It's not my area of expertise yet. But what I think matters a lot is that the leader needs to be super clear on what their vision is and their why. And then that needs to be communicated very clearly with the team. And there needs to be some kind of alignment. So, like you said, with hiring, it's about creating a culture. So in the same way that you'd pick a partner, ideally, who shares your values, you're going to do the same when you're employing, right? As much as possible, because sometimes then you employ and then you find shit. Like, you know, they don't share our values. But so, you know, I think it's a lot like a relationship where in order to make a relationship work, there needs to be three very important things in place. There needs to be a shared vision. Mm-hmm. There needs to be shared values. And there needs to be magnetism, which means there needs to be chemistry, that you enjoy being together and you're attracted to each other on some kind of level. So
we can apply those, I suppose, to organizations as well.
Yes. And then just like with any relationship or any family, there need to be rituals that bring us together. So there need to be like family traditions and weekly rituals, like our trip to the coffee shop together, or our pancake making on a Sunday, or our bike ride, you know, with, you know, you and your son or something like that. Like those moments that bring us together, help us to see each other, you know.
It's so interesting that you say this about rituals, because, you know, we bring this up a lot with the organizations that we work with. And rituals is something that we always talk about. And every time I mention rituals, people look at me like we're building a sect or a cult over here.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's so mission critical.
Yeah.
Because those are the moments that, A, establish habits and establish a sort of undisciplined discipline. Okay? Because it should happen naturally, but it needs to happen. And if we don't make it happen, then obviously we're falling out.
Yeah.
And I do believe it's those things that really bring organizations together and create that element of connectedness to a certain extent. So I think that's really interesting that you mentioned rituals. Big fan. Okay, so then, sorry. Yeah.
No, because then you asked about getting
about the external, exactly. So that was my next point. So how do we communicate? And I think we're also living in a state where, you know, brands need to show more leadership because fundamentally, like I said at the very beginning, you know, it's better people who make better brands, and better brands will make a better world. Mm-hmm. Because fundamentally, brands are at least not maybe in charge of the money, but they do show where the money is going.
Yeah.
Okay. So if we build streams where, you know, we're taking business decisions that are impacting the world positively in the choices we make or the choices we deliberately don't take. Mm-hmm. And also how we associate and we attach ourselves to the right sort of influences. Mm-hmm. And also be ready to say no when influences go against what we believe in.
Yeah.
But if we are still happy to pay influences for saying the wrong thing, just because it's going to get them likes or views or engagement, then aren't we just funneling, you know, a negative, you know, spiral effectively?
Yes. And I think you're also wasting your money, because if you're working with someone who does not reflect your values, their audience is also not going to be in alignment with your values, most probably.
Well, I think it's a very dangerous angle, because sometimes what sells is not necessarily what we feel we believe in. So I think, you know, sometimes some of the best influencers out there do a great job, but there are some great influential people out there. I'm not going to call them great. Some very well-followed characters out there who are maybe spreading the wrong messages. Mm. And again, who am I to judge? But fundamentally, you know, if we continue to funnel cash just because it's bringing in sales, then obviously we're creating our own demise. And these are demise of cultures.
Yeah. I mean, something that I love about my community of clients is that we share values, you know, and that, you know, they're also committed to this self-development journey because they see, one, how it's positively impacted themselves, and two, that how it's positively impacted their relationships. You know, they see how it affects their kids. Mm-hmm. They see how it affects their partners and their friendships, you know, and they're so cool that they come on my podcast and they do sessions with me.
In fact, what I was going to ask you about was that. I think it's quite, you know, one thing which makes your clients extremely cool and interesting is the fact that they're extremely happy to discuss, you know, what they're going through with you and having a live podcast as a live therapy session, which is coaching.
Yeah. And it was a super vulnerable space, but they do it because they're so driven by this message, like, hey, like this has such a positive impact. Like I want to spread this to my friends and my family and, you know, have that positive impact.
And do you feel that by them sharing, you know, their innermost fears out into the world, you know, so exposed that they're going to be there forever, effectively, because I can go back into, you know, your Spotify podcast playlist and figure out what happened a couple of years back with one of your with one of your guests. Does that make the session more powerful and more effective because they've put it out there in the world?
Oh my God, it's so powerful, because then they have witnesses. You know, I mean, already the sessions are powerful when they're one-on-one, but when you have witnesses, like, the transformation that occurs is just like, boom, they own it, they integrate it. It's like fast, you know, and it's boom. Like, I love it. It's so cool.
Yeah. No, I think that's really interesting. I do feel like a little bit of a hypocrite standing here in front of you, because I do, as you know, I do profess and talk a lot about, you know, the importance of mental health and mental fitness. I talk a lot about, you know, how we should give more importance to, you know, people's mental health and how we should take care of our people, how we should take care of ourselves. And yet I've never been to one coaching therapy session in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't mean I have no issues and no problems, as we probably all know. I've got loads, and like we all do, I guess. But
yes, exactly.
I think I come from a generation where, probably very similar to what you started talking about at the very beginning, where, you know, only people with big issues went for therapy sessions.
Yes.
And I think we need to do something to break the stigma. Maybe I'm alone in this, but I don't feel I'm alone. I think I come from a generation where harden the fuck up was the quickest way of dealing with a big issue.
Yes.
And that obviously stays with people. So what is your message? Like, why is, you know, sharing, you know, like, how can you market your services to me? Pretend I need to come to you. Well, I probably do, but let's face it. Like, you know, how can we make it okay for people of my generation who have been, and maybe males even more than females, you know, get to that point where it's okay to let go and okay to, you know, put down all the armor?
I love your question. I know I've said this to every question, but it's true. So I have clients who are your age and they're founders of big companies, and I'm always like, I really appreciate the fact that they come, because I know that it's not a part of their like generational culture, you know? And sometimes they use the session a little differently. Perhaps like they'll use it more as a space to like unpack what they're going through business wise and kind of like understand, like just make sense of what's going on and all of the chaos and like kind of like make decisions. Like it's a space to just kind of hear themselves out, tune in with their gut, like, and just kind of like, okay, this feels right to me, so I can like now go and action it, you know? And some of them use it to like understand their relationship with their kids more, or to understand their relationship with their wives. So I think they're the types of people who realize that therapy and coaching is not about being messed up. It's not that I go to these sessions because I have massive problems. It's I go to these sessions because I'm a good human being and I care. Like I care about the world. I care about my family and I want to bring my best. I care about my company and I want to bring my best. At the same time, sessions isn't the only way to do that. So if like sessions isn't for you, you know, like kind of each to their own. I know that you do like your cycling and your swimming and your running, you know, and for some people that's enough, you know, especially if like, I don't know, maybe you attach really well with your wife and I don't know, but everybody has their own way. I don't think there's one way to be a good human being.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I like the way you frame that. I think it's really interesting. When you invited me once to join you for one of your sessions where you were explaining, where you were going through, you know, the whole, you know, kind of steps of building the life that you choose and understanding how to sort of, you know, what's important to you. I remember you put an exercise in front of us where we wanted to list down, I think, 20 things, you know, which we wanted to achieve by a certain date. And then you grabbed that and you trashed it and you said, okay, now focus just on three, I believe it was, or
yeah,
was it five?
This was an exercise that Warren Buffett uses every few years to get in touch with what's next, like what's most important to me. So,
and I really found that methodology interesting. I've actually used it over and over again since that moment.
That's awesome. That's a part of the course, of my digital course.
It's great. So I think what I like about what you've managed to create is you've created a very simple methodology that doesn't feel
heavy
at all.
No.
It actually feels extremely exciting. And I'm not giving you a chance to advertise your course on this podcast because it's not the point. But I really, would like to unpack how you came about, you know, really sort of building that methodology and why you believe that that is the, you know, one of the, not the best framework, but a framework that works, and how you can share that with people. Because I think that's really, really interesting. And, you know, I'm wondering how, you know, since then, how's it going and how are people using it? So let's start off with unpacking the methodology. Like, what brought you to make it so simple and yet so engaging and actually fun? Yeah.
Well, I think I really need to thank Tony Robbins for this, because he's been one of my main mentors when it comes to coaching. Like, I've got several mentors, but Tony became like this super influential person in my life. And I've met him, like I've been in the same room and we've made eye contact, but I've never been like, hi, Tony, like I'm Emma, like we don't know. Tony is someone who says complexity is the enemy of execution. So simplify everything. Mm-hmm. So I really apply that to my life as much as possible. So I also applied that to my methodology. And also, Tony, if you go to a Tony Robbins event, like if you go to Unleash the Power Within or Date with Destiny or Business Mastery or whatever, it's super fun. Like there's music, you're high-fiving people you don't know, you're hugging people you don't know, like you're doing exercises under pressure and there's like this like intense music. It's super fun. Like it's, you feel high in a way, and it's totally natural.
I've always really enjoyed studying Tony Robbins as a great marketing guru.
Yeah.
I must say, so I looked at him and saying like, oh, one of these great American, you know, marketing, you know, businessmen who are just trying to monetize, you know, people's issues.
Yeah.
But I must say, like, I've listened to his audiobooks, I've listened to his podcasts, I've watched a Netflix series. There's some really great stuff there. Yes. And then seeing what you did and, you know, taking what you've learned and unpacking that and creating this methodology was like, for me, a perfect proof that he might have all the marketing skills, but he's also, there's a lot of great stuff in there, which is really powering up.
Him and his people, they're super salesy.
Yeah, so
if you go to an event, they're going to sell to you and they're not even going to hide it. And it's just going to be like, oh my God, like I'll go get a coffee at this point, you know, but he is a person of substance. I mean, even if you like learn about his childhood and his story, and you can see like the guy loves, like his love in this giant body, you know. And if I can suggest, he recorded a podcast with one of the authors of the book, The Fourth Turning. Mm-hmm. And it's all about this concept of winter, which brings a lot of sense to the state that the world is in at this point in time, like the sense of chaos. And it's helpful. Mm-hmm. It's helpful to kind of understand how we got here and how we can get out. So for anyone listening, it's a good podcast.
Yeah, I think I've heard that. I've heard references to Tony Robbins mentioning the winter of life, or the winter of the world where we are right now, and how that is, it's actually needed to get to the next place as well.
Exactly.
So I think that's interesting.
Get to spring, interesting point. Where there'll be a spiritual awakening.
Yeah, and I think that is really well needed within, you know, where we are today as human beings and as we are to the world. And talking about what's coming next and talking about winter and moving on to spring, you said that you were at a bit of a junction and moving forward, you know, in developing your next phase, your next, let's call it a chapter if you wish.
Yeah.
So what's happening next? I don't know if you're willing to talk about it right now.
Sure. I mean, I think that, yes, I'm a bit unbaked with this thinking.
And it's fine. And we all, you know, what happens next is always unbaked. And the more people I speak to, whilst you might have a vague idea of the right direction to take, I think we'll only know when we get there, you know, what it really, really looks like. So, you know, I think the more you try and talk about it, the more you can clarify that vision.
Yeah.
And I'm very, very happy to challenge you further on it. So if you want, we can use this as a live branding session.
Thank you. I'd love that.
There you go.
Super valuable. So I'm at a point, like I said earlier, where I want to bring more attention to, like, I want to get back in the game. Like, I've been quiet for a good year. Mm-hmm. And before that, I was trying to cope with everything for the first year of my son's life, and it was tough. And so I've been much quieter. So I haven't been on social media much. And, you know, I created this amazing course, which obviously has sold, but not to the extent that I'd like it to. So I want to put that out there more because I really do believe in it. And I, you know, feel that if more people have a more fulfilling career, then they're going to be more fulfilled in their lives in general and ultimately treat people around them better. Turns on the prefrontal cortex. Yeah. So that's all in alignment. So I definitely want to be moving in that direction. And I also want to honor this sort of like drive, this sort of vocational sort of pull that I'm feeling towards community. So like typically I would run the New Year Evolution workshop, which was great for growing my brand. But now that sort of I've sort of lost my momentum on social media and it doesn't really make sense for me to do that. And also like my practice is full. Like I don't like, it's not that I sort of need more clients. Like I'm always grateful when clients come, but it's not that I like need more clients. I want to develop the online side of my business, the digital courses, because like, there's the Create Your Kick-Ass Career one. And also I've got so many ideas like for other courses and I'm so excited about them. So like, that's what I want to be putting my energy towards and like the community. So instead of the New Evolution workshop this year, like I've created like an event, like where I don't want to say too much because it's a little bit secret, but like
fair enough, and we can hold on to that.
It's all based on connection. I've designed something that is all based on like, okay, bring your mask down just for a couple of hours, like do it slowly at your own pace and do it to an extent that feels good to you and just let the people in front of you like see who you are just for a few hours and let's have fun with it, like you know. So I'm
giving people that. the freedom to be themselves, really who they really are, maybe and exposed in front of some others. And I think that's obviously, I think so many people, you know, build this big sort of mask in front of them, respective of what, of who they are and how much they think that they're out there and honest. And I think, and that's the whole purpose of Unbrand Me. Sometimes we build these auras around us and not for the sense of creating a fake aura, but it's just what attaches and what sticks. And sometimes to kind of, you know, peel back the layers and remind ourselves of who we are and expose that in front of other people who might not be, you know, sometimes perfect strangers is actually easier for us to do it in front of.
Yes.
I think it's extremely liberating. I think just listening to what you're saying and having lived through one of your group sessions and actually seeing, you know, the videos and, you know, it was a kind of a test. I mean, the content is great.
Thank you.
And I really do believe that, you know, you sharing that content and making it available to others, of course at a fee, because this is, you know, what we're doing. This is, you know, your business. I think is extremely important for the world out there. I think there's some really valuable content out there. I think you also need to see yourself sometimes, and this is what I've learned from building my own business, is that Brandwagon is not Brandwagon today because of Pete. Brandwagon is because I was just lucky enough or extremely strategic at that time to find people who are extremely different to me and surround myself with people who are much better than me, who could do the job that I couldn't do.
Yeah.
And maybe this is your opportunity, possibly, to partner up with someone who does all the digital work ridiculously well, whilst you go ahead and do what you do fantastically well.
Yes.
And keep pumping more of it, rather than getting stressed with that stuff that is potentially not, you know, your kind of bag of tricks.
I agree with you and thank you for that. And I recently received this feedback from a client of mine as well, who's guiding me a little bit with my social media. And so I really appreciate that. I think that a lot of mums can relate to this, like when you sort of step out of the game for a while and you lose that momentum, you know, like confidence is a muscle, like, and the more that you practice it, the more like the easier it gets. But when you kind of step out of it sometimes, then it becomes a little bit like there's more resistance now, like it feels tougher.
I mean, you know, to be fair, like I think as a brand, whilst you might say like, shit, I haven't been out there for a very long time, I think, you know, the Emma Hogg brand is still strong and I think it's still there. And it's just, you might feel the lack of engagement online and you might feel that you're not, you know, showing up in the same way that you used to. But living your true self and to the stuff that you're doing out there online, I think is also extremely powerful. So don't underestimate how, you know, the power of your brand, and like stepping away for a while actually builds anticipation. Okay, so there's a reason why, you know, musicians and, you know, people who come out there with their great albums then take a gap. So I wouldn't be too worried about the fact that you've stepped away from this. I think there's, you know, just because you stepped out for a while, I think just creates the bigger anticipation of waiting for you to come back with your next big hit. Okay, so I wouldn't worry too much, and I'm sure that, you know, you'll find new fans and the old fans ready to embrace whatever new content that you're going to put out there.
Thank you.
So I think it's been a really great session. I can't believe that. I'm looking at the time, it's like just shot past.
It was fun.
It was fun. I really enjoyed that. More than fun, I think it was extremely insightful. Like you've shared some really interesting stats, knowledge, insights, and I do feel like I have maybe a bit of a heavier burden on my shoulders knowing where the world right now is, but I've also filled with hope and encouragement to go out there and use, you know, whatever I have means, you know, to actually start having more impact on the world and trying to fix it.
I'm glad.
No, thank you for that. Before we leave, though, you know, I asked you a question to prepare because I put some people on the test there. If there was one song that would be the soundtrack to your life, what's the song?
There's no combination of words I put on the back of a postcard.
Nice.
No song that I could sing that I could try for your heart. Our dreams, they are made out of real things, like a shoebox of photographs or sepia toned loving. Love is the answer, at least for most of the questions in my heart, like why are we here, where do we go, and how come it's so hard? It's not always easy, and sometimes life can be deceiving. I'll tell you one thing, it's always better when we're together. That's my song.
Wow. Jack Johnson, right?
Yes.
Amazing. I've never been sung to like that.
I sing to my son every night, so
that's great.
It just comes naturally.
Wow, you're actually a really good singer.
Thank you.
Well done. Emma, thank you so much for that, and thank you for the performance. I really enjoyed that. Cool.
Thank
Gracias.
You.